From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. The legalization of marijuana for adults in Colorado and Washington, in addition to many states legalizing medical marijuana, has led many investors to see gold in the cannabis industry. One of them is Brendan Kennedy. Brendan is the CEO of Privateer Holdings. It's a Seattle-based cannabis-focused venture capital fund. They have raised millions of dollars to invest in the cannabis business. Leading up to this, Brendan got an engineering degree. He started a software firm and sold it to Boeing, studied for a Yale MBA, and joined a Silicon Valley bank reviewing new business proposals. And from that review, he kind of tumbled onto cannabis as a way perhaps forward. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Ross, thanks for having me.
So your bottom line estimate, cannabis could be a $50 billion business, but doesn't there have to be a big asterisk after that since its status with the federal government is still as a class one regulated drug?
No, definitely. So when we use the term $50 billion, we're talking about, we actually believe that that's the size of the current market, somewhere between $40 and $50 billion. And that's looking at the gray market, so the legal market in the currently 19 medical marijuana states, plus D.C., and combining that gray market with the black market, the illicit market in all 50 states.
So currently $50 billion. Where do you see this going? I mean, you're a numbers guy. Are you projecting this forward, assuming all things being equal, how big this might be? And instead of just the raw number, maybe you could also compare it to some other business we might be familiar with.
So oddly, I don't really see the size of the industry changing. I see it staying the same. I believe that most people who want to consume cannabis are already consuming cannabis. I'm not certain that demand will increase, but I do know that that price will decrease because essentially what we're doing is we're removing a risk premium for this product by making it more legal. So you should see price falling. You asked me to compare it to a couple of other products. So we think in Washington State, it's likely to be the number two agricultural product behind apples. Comparing it nationally to other agricultural products, currently the size of the corn market is somewhere around $23 to $25 billion. So it's bigger than corn. Soybeans is somewhere around $17 to $20 billion. So it's almost as large currently as corn and soybeans put together.
Well, I'm sure you get asked this all the time by potential investors, but what if this goes south on the legal front? What if the Department of Justice goes, you know, enough, we're calling it off. You might want to do this on a state basis, but this is against federal law. Shut it down.
We don't see it going that direction. We think that the Berlin Wall of cannabis prohibition is coming down. In fact, our fundamental thesis is that it's past the tipping point. We're simply waiting for gravity and inertia to take effect. And we're looking at a situation in the U.S. where 80 to 85% of Americans believe that medical cannabis should be legal if recommended by a doctor. And the Pew Research Center says that 52% of Americans believe that cannabis should be legalized, regulated, and taxed, similar to alcohol and tobacco. So public opinion has shifted on this, and we believe that legalization is inevitable in our lifetimes, and our thesis is sooner rather than later.
Well, one of our first investments is in Leafly, and it offers user reviews of different strains of marijuana. Think Yelp for pot. If you want to try to imagine this, you can actually check out the website. How does a business like that make money?
So Leafly last month, Leafly.com had about 2.5 million total visits. And that's a combination of people who visited the website, use the iPhone app or the Android app. And those people are patients who are looking for specific strains of cannabis for specific effects. So someone who has cancer and is going through chemotherapy could find a strain that suppressed nausea and stimulated the appetite. Those would be two effects. We'll take, based on 70,000 patient reviews, we'll take 500 plus strains that we track, narrow it down to 4, 6, or 10 that match that patient's requirement. That's the first step. So answering the what question, yeah. What's the right strain? And then the second step is where can that patient find it? And so we have 3,000 dispensaries across the U.S. and across Canada and in Israel and the Netherlands.
And they pay to be mentioned as a place you can find
exactly.
That strain.
Exactly. And they update their menus. And
right.
So it's like a restaurant, but you're looking for specific menu items. And so we tell people in your zip code, this is where you could find the particular strain that would help you.
So where else have you put your money down besides Leafly?
Leafly is the only portfolio company that we talk about right now. We have
Have others, but you're not going to talk about.
We have two other stealth companies that we're in negotiations with that we'll sign. We'll sign the investment documents here in the next 30 to 60 days.
Okay, we'll look forward to that press release. But are these all kind of ancillary industries not directly involved in growing, processing, and selling marijuana?
So exactly. Nothing we do violates any local, state, or federal laws. So we don't prescribe cannabis. We don't grow it. We don't distribute it. We don't retail it.
Do you envision that changing if the legal environment changes?
We do. You know, our focus is on brands and marketing and creating companies that are professional, that are clean, that are transparent, that elevate the conversation away from the typical cliches that we can all picture whenever there's a media story or article about this subject. We're tired of the cliches and. We believe that most people who consume cannabis don't identify with those cliches.
Are you still fighting those cliches yourself at your company, Privateer Holdings? I mean, are possible investors saying, do you guys smoke pot? How much pot do you guys smoke?
Not really from investors. Every once in a while, you'll get an investor who will get a case of the giggles about a minute into the presentation, and they just can't – people can't hold puns in. So they can't help it. I've heard them all, and this industry is a minefield of puns that we're getting good at navigating, but every once in a while we step on one.
Can investments in cannabis-related businesses, the place that you're going, succeed if the core business of growing and processing and selling does not?
Definitely. We're at with New Hampshire last week becoming the 19th state. In the next 40 to 60 days, we see Illinois becoming the 20th state. We now have 3 dispensaries open in Washington, D.C. The medical cannabis movement and progression, it's not going to stop. Cannabis is mainstream. 40 million Americans have used it in the last year. 140 million Americans have used it in their lifetime. Our current president has used it. Previous 2 presidents used it. It's not going to stop. This is inevitable. We believe that, and everyone we talk to believes that. We are going to see legalization.
Brendan Kennedy is my guest. He's the CEO of Privateer Holdings. It's a cannabis-focused venture capital fund based here in Seattle. They take a look at businesses that might be able to profit, kind of ancillary businesses to the actual growth and production and sales of marijuana. And a lot of attention has been focused on the recreational and medical use. That's what we've been talking about here. But, of course, hemp has other applications. We're seeing hemp clothing. I just noticed today BMW is making door panels with hemp, which surprised me. But the U.S. remains the only industrialized country where it's illegal, except in a couple of states, to grow even drug-free hemp. Do you envision that becoming big, and is that part of what you want to add to your portfolio?
Definitely. So hemp is an agricultural product that's been grown for 5,000 years. It's typically one of the first non-food products grown by any civilization. It's played an important role in American history. Christopher Columbus sailed here on a ship that used hemp sails. It was mandatory to grow hemp in Jamestown. Thomas Jefferson, George Washington grew hemp. When the wagons went across the United States in westward migration, the canvas was grown was made from hemp, and the word canvas comes from cannabis. So it's played an important role in American history, and We believe that the 75-year-long experiment in prohibition is failing and will end. And I think that in the U.S. we're at an economic disadvantage by being the only country that can't produce hemp.
But unlike the medical marijuana front, where there seem to be victories every year or expansion of it, I don't see a lot of movement on the allowing of growing of industrialized hemp for that purpose.
Definitely, and it's because of the risk. The reward for growing a pound of hemp is significantly lower than the reward for growing a pound of cannabis. And so farmers face enough risks. They're risk averse, and so you don't see farmers in the U.S. growing large amounts of hemp because it's illegal, and there's just not that reward there.
Brandon Kennedy is with me. He's the CEO of Privateer Holdings. You have offices here in Washington State and Colorado, the other states that's legalizing marijuana for use by adults. And both states are finalizing the regulations for growing and processing and retail sales of marijuana to adults. Now, you mentioned this is like gravity. This is kind of going forward. But you must be looking closely at those regulations and what they say. How do you think they are playing out here in Washington State?
We've been really impressed by the work being done by the Washington State Liquor Control Board. This was dumped on their laps in November. They had done some work starting last summer to prepare for it. And they've done a tremendous job of going out and researching not only what has worked in other states, but what hasn't worked in other states, what didn't work in California, what didn't work in Arizona. And they've taken a really thoughtful approach to it. I've been very impressed by all of the work that they've done. It's not going to be perfect at the get-go. And that's one of the things that I discussed when I met with them. Places like Colorado have done a good job of continually refining the regulations over the past 3 years. And the Liquor Control Board here in Washington State will need to do the same thing.
What direction do you see the business going in? Some entrepreneurs, like a former Microsoft strategy manager, I think it's Haman Shively, I'm not sure how to say his name. We expect to have him on in a couple of weeks. He's imagining a national marijuana brand, so sort of Marlboro for marijuana, a big, big business that way. Do you see the business going in that direction?
I don't. I think that there's a lot of resistance for a national brand like that amongst consumers of cannabis. I think that I'm not sure what the perfect model is. I think it's probably closer to something like the craft brewery industry. If I'm at a bar or at a restaurant, I may have a Manny's. But if I'm at the grocery store, they don't sell Manny's, and so maybe I'll have a Red Hook or a local brew. And I think that's probably the right model. I don't see the Budweiserification of the cannabis industry.
And yet they sell a lot more Budweiser than they do Manny's.
Yes,
I mean,
they do.
The big brands sell multiples more product than the tiny craft brands do. So why would marijuana be different?
I think the main reason is that the laws are so different state to state, and there's such a different acceptance of cannabis in different regions. I think it'll take a very long time if any national brands emerge.
I want to talk a little bit about the banking issue, and these are for businesses directly involved in growth and cultivation and sales, which is not exactly where you're going to, but it certainly has to affect where you're going to if you're talking about ancillary businesses. As I understand it, federal banking rules prohibit many financial institutions from handling money, and this is one issue that these businesses have. What do we do when we can't work with a bank? How do you see that resolving itself?
So it's a huge problem. There's a bill in Congress that was submitted by Ed Perlmutter out of Colorado, specifically addressing banking. We don't violate any local, state, or federal laws. And we've had three banks over the last 2 years. We've been kicked out of our bank with 30 days notice. They told us to transfer our funds, or they would send us a cashier's check for. At that time, we had about $3 million in that particular account. Someone in Cleveland, Ohio, saw me on CNBC, I believe, and I was on his compliance list. He worked for the bank, and they gave us 30 days notice. So banking's a problem for us. It's it's a much bigger problem. It's much a harder problem for people who actually touch cannabis, for dispensary owners and growers. And it's a completely irrational approach that the federal government is taking, because on one hand, the IRS wants to collect taxes on this product. On the other hand, by not having banking, they're driving it completely underground and making it an all-cash industry. I've been in rooms with $1 million in cash in a dispensary, essentially a giant safe, and those dispensaries are targets for crime because of this policy. It's completely illogical and irrational.
So why is this catching up privateer holdings if you are kind of a hands off the actual cannabis thing? If you're working with ancillary businesses, how do federal banking laws catch you up in that? I mean, do federal laws catch up companies that make rolling papers? I mean,
no. So nothing we do is in violation of any federal laws. Nothing. Nothing.
Banks don't want to deal with you.
It's reputational risk. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
They're concerned about how banking us affects their reputation.
They don't want to be associated with you.
They don't want to be associated with us.
So do you have banks you can work with here in Washington State?
We don't currently have a bank in Washington State. There are some Washington State banks and local banks that seem receptive, but I think they're waiting to see what plays out over the next 6 months.
So you're aggregating money together. You've got Leafly. You've got a couple more companies you're going to tell us about in 30 or 60 days that you're going to put money into. And how are you doing on the raising money end of it?
So we're done. We closed our initial round of $7 million about 2 weeks ago.
And tell me where you expect to be a year from today with privateer holdings and your investments.
Oh, gosh. I think that we'll continue to see additional states enact medical cannabis legislation. I think that Oregon will enact a measure similar to I-502 or Amendment 64 in Colorado in November 2014. So that's a little more than a year away. We'll continue to deploy capital in the U.S. in ancillary segments of the industry. Depending on what sort of response we see from the federal government, we may migrate closer to the product, and we also continue to evaluate international opportunities.
Would you expect a year from now that you would be reopened to investors? You'll have put out all that money that you've raised so far.
Yeah, the $7 million for us provides us with about 12 to 16 months worth of runway, mm-hmm. and it's. We have demand already from investors for them to invest additional capital. I'm frankly just not sure how we would deploy it currently.
Hey, Brendan Kennedy, thanks for telling us about your business. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Ross.
Brendan is the CEO of Privateer Holdings. It's a cannabis-focused venture capital fund based right here in Seattle. From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.